we invited Jeffrey Goldberg to talk with us about Hezbollah. His two-part article about Hezbollah in the New Yorker magazine in 2002 won the National Magazine Award for Reporting and the Center for Public Integrity's Award for Outstanding International Investigative Reporting. Goldberg has covered the Middle East for the New Yorker magazine and is now a Washington correspondent. His memoir, Prisoners, A Muslim and Jew Across the Middle East Divide, will be published this fall. It's about the time in the 90s when he briefly moved to Israel and served in the Israeli army. I talk with him about meeting leaders of Hezbollah for his New Yorker article. You met with some leaders of Hezbollah in 2002.
Right.
How did you manage to do that?
I called them up on the telephone in Beirut. Hezbollah actually does have a spokesman or a spokesman's office, and I expressed an interest in meeting its leaders and getting a tour of its facilities in the southern suburbs of Beirut, where a lot of this bombing is now taking place, as well as in the Bekaa Valley and in South Lebanon, which Israel had recently, at that point, evacuated. And they were amenable. Every terrorist group has a story to tell, and it wants its story out.
And so was that easy? You just called, what, the head publicist for Hezbollah?
Yeah, they're a little suspicious, as you might well imagine, particularly with someone with my last name. But I make no bones about who I am. That sort of straightforwardness usually works in my favor. They probably, actually, I know for a fact that they Googled me. The vaunted Hezbollah intelligence service used Google just like everyone else. I mean, the thing that you have to remember about any of these groups is that while we might look at them and think terrorists, they, of course, define themselves as resistance fighters, freedom fighters, and they have a narrative as well, and they want that narrative out.
And what was the narrative that they presented to you?
Their narrative is very complex. Their super narrative, if you will, their Islamic narrative, is that they are the party, even more than Hamas or Palestine Islamic Jihad, certainly more than the secular Palestinian organizations, PLO, or organizations surrounding the PLO. They are at the vanguard of anti-Zionist, anti-Israel resistance, and that they are the stalwart fighters who will bring down the state of Israel and the whole Zionist entity, as they call it, which is Zionist entity is a, in secular Palestinian terms, is an archaic term. It's the PLO stopped using that in the 70s, but Hezbollah still uses it today. So that's part of their narrative. Their other, and so their narrative is that they are the best fighters. That they are the ones who will bring about the defeat of Israel on behalf of the Palestinians. This, by the way, has caused a lot of jealousy between Hamas and Hezbollah. Though they work together on occasion, they're also quite competitive with each other. Each one wants to be the symbol across the Muslim world, across the Arab world, of anti-Israel steadfastness. So that's part of their narrative. Their other narrative, of course, is that they are a Lebanese political party and that they are trying to play politics within the system and that they are the representatives of the dispossessed Shiite plurality or majority at this point, we don't know, since there's no census recently, of the dispossessed Shiites of Lebanon. There's another part of their narrative, which is that they are the embodiment of the spirit and the will and the beliefs of Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder, the leader of the Iranian Islamic Revolution in 1979. So they have multiple personalities, this organization.
Who did you meet with in 2002 from Hezbollah?
I saw a whole bunch of people, including the spiritual leader, Sheikh Fadlallah. I met Sheikh Nasrallah only for a minute. There was a long argument in Hezbollah in these circles. I was there for a few weeks, whether or not they should let me see him. And I met him in a group of people. But as soon as I started asking questions, they shuffled him away. I met a lot of the fighters and leaders of the fighters in South Lebanon and in the Bekaa Valley as well. the guy, I guess, who gave me the best understanding of the worldview is the spiritual leader of the so-called spiritual leader of Hezbollah, Sheikh Fadlallah, who is a Iranian-trained cleric who has extraordinary influence among the Shiites of Lebanon.
Now, you're Jewish. How did he react to being interviewed by a Jewish journalist?
Whenever I deal with Islamic terrorists, Islamists, clerics, and extremists, it doesn't matter where, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Lebanon, the same rules generally tend to hold, which is that there's an attraction-repulsion phenomenon that takes place. In other words, they're repulsed by Jews, repulsed by everything that they think Jews and Judaism and Israel and Zionism stand for. On the other hand, they spend most of their lives thinking about Jews, so when one actually shows up in their living room, it's quite an event. And what they want to do, generally, this is my experience, is get into a big argument. They want to ask questions, and they want to argue points. Some of the points they want to argue are things that I'm not ready to argue about. I mean, they want to argue about. I remember with Sheikh Fadlallah, I think he had a, I guess what I would call a profound misunderstanding of what the Talmud is and what the Torah is. And I wasn't going to go there. I'm not going to start trying to disabuse him of his fantastical beliefs and what is contained, what secrets are contained in the Torah. And I've seen this a number of times, even with Hezbollah in the South, I remember in South Lebanon, when they realize that I'm Jewish, and it's not something I hide, when they realize I'm Jewish, sometimes they'll even call up friends and say, hey, come over, there's a Jewish guy here, you're not going to believe it. And you know, I find that arguing with them brings out more information that I can use in my articles.
My guest is Jeffrey Goldberg of The New Yorker magazine. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jeffrey Goldberg, former Middle East correspondent and current Washington correspondent for The New Yorker. He won a National Magazine Award for his 2002 New Yorker article about Hezbollah. Where was the headquarters of Hezbollah that you visited, and what did they look like?
It's actually very interesting. There was a bifurcation, if you will. Most of the Hezbollah buildings are in the Dahiya, the so-called southern suburbs of Beirut. You see that in the newspaper, the southern suburbs. They're not very suburban looking by our standards of suburban. They're big, tall buildings and crowded streets. And what I noticed was very interesting, and this is what one of the Hezbollah fellows told me, was that the offices were fairly makeshift. One of the people I was dealing with there told me that they're built and stocked and manned in such a way that they can be broken down in a half hour or an hour. That there's not a great deal of investment put into the aesthetics of these headquarters buildings. Not for lack of money, by the way, but because there is the expectation, now fulfilled, I guess, that Israel would target these buildings first if it ever came to open conflict. The one different, the building that always struck me as quite different was the headquarters of the Hezbollah television station, Al Manar, which when you walk into the lobby, it looks, well, it's nicer than the NPR lobby in Washington, as a matter of fact. It's a marble and glass building, and you know, air-conditioned and carpeted, and the studios are top-notch, and the editing suites are top-notch. And I was always struck by the amount of money that they poured into their television station. But generally speaking, it's an organization that didn't invest quite a lot of money in its above-ground facilities. Now, of course, as you probably know, Hezbollah has a series of bunkers that they built underneath this neighborhood, connected by tunnels and buried fairly deeply in the ground. I was not allowed to see those, obviously, but I assume that they are well-provisioned and built to last.
You mentioned how nice the lobby of Al Manar, the Hezbollah TV station, was. I assume that that's the same location that was bombed.
It was. I think Israel understands the central role Al-Manar plays in propagating the true faith of Hezbollah. On the other hand, it's not directly a military target.
As somebody who lived in Israel, lived on a kibbutz, joined the Israeli army in the early 90s, do you think that Israel's use of force now is disproportionate? Are you worried about the number of Lebanese civilians who are being hurt, about the destruction of some of the Lebanese infrastructure?
This is the most difficult question of all. I don't know. It's very interesting, and this is an argument that people have been having forever and will continue to have. Hezbollah bases itself in heavily crowded civilian areas of Beirut. It hides its weapons in mosques and underneath hospitals and in villages. It fires its rockets from the centers of villages filled with civilians in order to protect itself, in order to limit the damage that Israel can cause to it. So then you have to ask yourself, you're an Israeli prime minister, you're elected by the people to defend Israel. Someone is firing a rocket into Haifa, killing civilians, and they're firing this rocket from a heavily populated area. What do you do? I think, by the way, that if you look at what's happened over the past week, I think some of the things that haven't happened are more interesting than the things that have happened. I actually think that both sides have not crossed all of the red lines yet. I hope they don't cross all of the red lines. But I think Israel has the capability of flattening all of Lebanon in about 12 hours. And it's been fairly pinpoint in its attacks. Hezbollah hasn't yet fired its most deadly rockets or most of its most deadly rockets, and they haven't yet hit Tel Aviv. I think that they understand that if they cross yet another red line, that Israel will simply flatten all of the Shiite areas of Beirut and flatten most of South Lebanon. One wishes that not a single civilian would be hurt. But one of the things I noticed about Hezbollah, and going back to this question about the offices, is that many of the Hezbollah offices in South Beirut, in the southern suburbs of Beirut, were placed on the lower floors of civilian apartment buildings. And by my Western standards of morality, that's quite immoral. You shouldn't, I mean, literally, the fearsome and brave leaders of this so-called resistance movement were hiding behind women and children. And you have to ask yourself, and you have to put yourself in the shoes of the Israeli prime minister who is supposed to defend his people, and ask yourself, because Hezbollah has made this choice, does this mean that I cannot go and attack the people who are attacking my people? It's a terrible dilemma. It's tragic and it's terrible. But I would look a little bit more to Hezbollah's culpability in this, and a little less to Israel's culpability. In Gaza, I think that some of the actions of the last couple of weeks were probably an overreaction. But in Lebanon, it's hard for me to say that quite yet.
Well, Jeffrey Goldberg, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Goldberg writes for The New Yorker magazine. His memoir, Prisoners, A Muslim and a Jew Across the Middle East Divide, will be published this fall. Tomorrow, we'll talk about Lebanon with Julia Chuker of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's Lebanese and has lived in the U.S. for the past 6 years.